Jenna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jenna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. The following is a paid program, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent the opinions of the management of this station or Hamel Broadcasting. Good morning, and welcome to Happy Hour. Here it is, Jenna Spilbor. It is Carol Pesci, and we have got ourselves another show, and it's John Rose M. Berg, though it is actually just one word, right, Carol?
Yes, and we're pronouncing that deliberately because it's so commonly you hear Rosenberg, and we want to make sure people get it straight. It's Rosenberg, and excuse me, he has a brand new book out called A Guide to Thriving: The Science Behind Breaking Old Patterns, Reclaiming Your Agency, and Finding Meaning. And he was referred again by a great guest we had a month or so ago, Jill Shulman, who wrote The Bravery Effect. And I'm reading his book and absolutely loving it, about how we stay commonly in our safety zones and play small, and how we can really reclaim living a more fulfilling life. So his book is fantastic.
Okay, and kudos to Jill Shulman. I mean, she's become like our second PR person when it comes to searching out guests, huh?
She's a rock star. I asked her because we had such a great time with her. I went, hey, you know anybody else who might like to join? And she gave me like 6-7 names.
I'm like, awesome. She's like, oh, what? Are you sitting down and do you have a pen?
Yeah, she's great.
I think, you know what I think about his name? What? I think like when his, you know, past relatives emigrated here, I bet you somebody just scribbled and they got it wrong. That happened to a lot of people who came over here. Their names just got messed up because people couldn't spell and stuff.
Interesting.
When my family came over, apparently, according to my dad, the original
name. Is that what happened to you, Frankenberry?
It is. It is, actually.
Really?
The original name, well, not sort of. They changed it on purpose, according to my dad, because it was Frankenberger, and they they wanted it. Believe it or not, they wanted it to sound more American. At least what they thought, you know, at the time. This will sound a little bit more. Yeah, a little more. The Berry sounded better than Burger. Because the Frankenberger just sounded very, very German.
Wow. So Burgermeister Meisterburger.
Yeah. And apparently they didn't want to be confused with vendors at a ballpark, you know, so.
That's funny.
Yeah, my father was, his first name was Franz, and he changed it to Frank to be more American when he and my grandmother immigrated here.
Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of people did that. But I think, and they were just messy. Have you ever seen those, when you see the records from people coming over here and signing their names and stuff? Very hard to read.
Yeah.
That's what I think happened. But you know darn well, I feel for him because he probably had Rosenberg on every single piece of mail, on everything, no matter what.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, I get Johanna Gilmore or Jenna Stillborn or
Early Pesky.
My favorite has always been Fran Kenberry.
Seriously?
That's my favorite. I got a piece of mail once where I was Fran Kenberry, and I was like, oh, cool. Now I can call Dot and Bev. We can go bowling. You know,
awesome.
Fran and Dot and Bev, and give me another old woman with a three-letter name.
Oh,
or four-letter name.
That is so funny.
Flo. Do you miss Flo?
Oh, there you go, Flo. See, there's our four for Saturday night. So, so Spilbor, I have to say, by the way, and I did see this, and it might not be what you were initially going to talk about, but that is like the coolest cat tower I have ever seen, and literally the coolest cat tree tower I have ever seen. For you folks out there that may not know, you know, have followed or caught Jenna Spilbor's Facebook page, she has bought a Christmas-themed cat tower for the 300 cats in her house, and it's like a three-tiered thing that they can jump into the Christmas tree, bigger on the bottom and then a little smaller up top, each one being a section of cat places to do cat stuff. And each one has like a little circular hole, I'm sure, the cats can go up into from one level to another. And I did see that video the other day of even the one cat kind of falling out of it and running away, making funny sounds.
Yeah. No cats were injured in the filming of that video, I promise you. But yeah, so I got that for fun because I am thinking ahead to Christmas. This isn't what I was going to complain about, but I can. I was thinking ahead to Christmas.
Just give me a minute.
I got skills. I can.
That's right. And, you know, this is the first year of my, while I've, you know, had other rescue cats, they don't have run in my house, but these little guys and their mother and aunt have run of the house because of the situation and how they were born in my house. And I'm like, everybody tells me these horror stories about cats and Christmas trees are like, you know, oil and water.
Yep.
Right. So, and I love Christmas trees. I love having the beautiful lights. I love the ambiance this time of year. And I'm like, what am I going to do? Not that this tree that I bought for the cats, but I'm like, well, maybe if they have their own tree, they'll leave mine alone.
Nah.
Oh, they will until you put yours in the house.
Yep.
Oh, come on.
Though I got to say, one of the greatest cat pictures I have ever taken in all my years of, you know, crazy cat lady guy dumb.
D-O-M, not D-U-M-B, everybody. Yeah. D-O-M.
Yeah, it was right. It was one of the kittens that we had when we had the five kittens in the house at one point, one of which stayed and became my buddy Shoes. And then my brother kept one. But Cal, there was one picture that we took where Cal had crawled on the inside of the tree, crawled out on a branch and stuck her face, just her little tiny kitten Cal face, through some lights and right next to a couple of hanging Christmas tree ornaments. And her face almost looked like one of the ornaments.
How adorable.
So at least you have that as a possibility before they start knocking crap off the tree and it starts rolling around on the floor and they start hockey pucking it around the room.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking. Like, maybe I can compromise and just have lights.
Compromise? She's going to call a cat meeting, Frankie Berry. All right, listen. I understand you want to play. Compromise.
That's what I was thinking. Somebody told me, actually my cousin, and I don't want to employ this method, but she said that there is a thing called, I think it's called scats or scat. And it's basically air in a can and motion censored, maybe, so that when the cats go by it, it blows air at them and then they don't like it and they stay away. Has anybody heard of this stuff?
No, the only scat that I know is, what is that, deer poop?
Oh.
Bear poop, too.
Or bear poop, one or the other. It's poop of some type.
Is that what they call it?
Does that air in a can smell like poop?
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, could you imagine? So it's, and maybe I could be getting the name wrong, because if scat is a name for animal poo and you name your product the same thing, you're stupid. You are really
you're stupid.
Well, I understand where scat comes from, though, obviously. So I can see why they would have named the product that.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't like the whole scaring them away from it. Although, you know, I guess here's what we're going to do, you guys. I'm going to try it the old fashioned way. I'm going to put up a darn Christmas tree and then I'm going to have my phone at the ready and we'll see how it goes.
There you go. You just have to make sure that you have a and I just forgot what they're called. What is the comfy cloth thing that goes? No. What is the skirt? You need a very comfy skirt underneath the tree, because then you'll grab some really, really cute pictures when they all decide to nap after playing with the tree. They're eventually going to end up on the skirt and they're going to get all comfy under the lights.
Oh, see? And that'll be my Christmas card.
There you go.
That's nice. All right. I know we're running out of time because we do have a guest coming up. So can I just complain for a couple minutes about something?
Of course. And we've got time. You're a good girlfriend. There's plenty of time to get in a Jonna complaint.
Listen, Linda, we would not have a segment one on this show if you didn't complain. So fire away.
Exactly.
So much. Okay. So I just had to leave a message for somebody and I cursed in it. I cursed.
Oh,
I did. Not proud, but I did. But here's why. And you guys might not agree with this. This is kind of a long story. I'm going to truncate it. Well, this isn't why, but this is also a precursor. Last year, I had some beautiful Christmas lights up on this built my new office building. And when I bought the building, the previous owner said, hey, you know, these Christmas lights, I have a company that comes, they put them up, they take them down, they store them, but the lights are yours now because you own the building. I'm like, great, that's great. So first year I was here was last year. So I contacted the company and said, hey, you know, let's put them up like you did for the previous owner. They charged me X amount of dollars. I sent over my credit card information. A week or two later, they came over, they put up the lights. Everything was great. And then sometime after Christmas, they take them down and they take the lights and they store them. So this company happened to go through a change of ownership. So I don't even remember what the name of the original company was, but they sold to another company. And as soon as they did, that new company was hounding me for the payment that I had made the before. Like, I mean, the lights are gone. The season's over. They're hounding me for this payment. So I said, hey, and I sent it again. This is the credit card information I sent over to so-and-so before he put up the lights. Here you go. So another few months goes by, this new company again, you have an outstanding balance. I'm like, no, I don't. And if I do, that's not my problem anymore. Like that's it. Like, you got the credit card information twice. You came over here, you put up the lights. If somebody from your previous company didn't charge me or screwed it up or you don't have the information, I'm not going to go look through months and months and months of credit card information to provide it to you. You had the number, you have the number, leave me alone, basically. So that was last year. So this year, I decided not to put those lights up because I wanted to get permanent lights. That's a whole other rant for another day.
I'm sure.
Oh, good.
So I said to the company, this new company, I'm like, hey, you guys have my lights. I need them back. You know, and they did give me a quote to put them up. It was too much. So I said, just give me my lights back. And they were like, oh, what can we do to keep your business? I'm like, you really can't. You know, you're charging an extra $500 from last year. Just give me my lights back. Okay, we'll drop them off. A few weeks go by. Hey, still don't have my lights. Okay, no problem. We'll drop them off. Today, before we go on air, I get an email. Hey, you have an outstanding balance from a year ago, and we're not going to return your lights.
Oh, my God.
You pay it. Right. I pick up the phone. I call this guy. And I'm rambling, trying to tell him what I just told you, only even shorter. And then when I got to the end of it, I'm like, you know, this has really turned into a total pain in my bleep. Yep.
And that's it? That's what you consider cursing? Okay, well, keep going.
Yep. And I said, and you need to call me back because I'm not going through a year's worth of credit card payments to do this all over again. And P.S., those lights are mine. You can't hold them hostage. I hang up. But now I'm just aggravated. I literally have one of those aggravated headaches that goes up from the back of your neck to the top of your head. And I'm like, you know what? I don't need this extra crap on my plate. I don't need to fight with them about just return my lights. Return my lights. And if you don't think the other company that you bought handled this transaction correctly, I mean, look, for all I know, how do I know that old company wasn't like, oh, there's a credit from the previous owner. We shouldn't have charged her. Or let's just gift her the, I don't know what they did. Not my problem. But because that company doesn't exist anymore. This company does. And I didn't have a contract with this company. So it's just annoying.
All right. Well, let me ask you a question. Have you just tried to call the credit card company, the one you used with that information, just to say, hey, listen, can you do me a favor? Can you check back to around this time last year and see if I was charged or when I was charged this amount of money? Just so you have proof that the payment was made. Doesn't matter which company it was made to, just the proof that the payment was made.
So first thing is you use the word call. Did I call? No.
Hold on, Carol. My bad. What was I thinking? I know.
No, we don't call unless we absolutely have to. Right, Curly? We don't.
Right.
We don't like calls. It takes too long. Number one. Number two, if I provide my credit card information, you come and you do the job that I have paid for, why should I even assume that you that the payment didn't get made? Like, why would I
don't know. Maybe because they might have taken your credit card information and then added a couple of dollars to it and you never checked to look. So have you decided to go online in lieu of a phone call to your credit card and just check back? It's very simple to check back month by month to say November or October, whatever month it was last year, and look for that charge.
Frank and Barry.
Yeah.
I agree with you 100% that any normal shopping spending human.
A good use of the word normal. Keep going.
Yep. Could quite easily go back to a 3 months of statements and scan through half a page.
Correct.
Maybe page and a half through the holidays. Mm-hmm. And find it. I don't think it's so simple in this case.
No, I realize that is a good point. It's a frustrating point, you know, as friends can get frustrated with other friends. But did you do this, Jonna? I know the answer, but go ahead and appease me anyway.
So in light of what Curly just said...
So the answer is no before you make this any longer than it needs to be.
First, I would have to figure out what credit card belongs to the number that I gave them. Then I would have, because believe it or not, and maybe you guys have this too, like if I have a credit card, well, first of all, I have credit cards that get changed all the time because of fraud. But anyway, when I have a credit card, my physical credit card and the virtual credit card number that some of my credit cards have are different. And so I got to figure out which credit card that number belongs to. Then I would have to log in. Then I would have to go back and see if there's a number close to that number, because I don't know what company technically would show up on my invoice.
But you know what the amount is.
I know the amount. Mm-hmm. So I'd have to go and do that. And I'm guessing approximate time waste to do all that is going to be more than a half hour.
No.
In an hour.
No. I could literally go right now into, and the number doesn't matter. You know what the actual credit card is. Is it a Capital One? Is it a Chase card? Is it a Discover? Is it a Bank of America card?
I don't know what that is. I got to figure that out first. Then I got to go in. All I know is the number that I gave them. That's it. That's all I know. It's not like I took a picture of the card and sent it over. They had a form. I put in the number, sent it over.
Where did you get the number from?
Frank and Barry. So logical. It's just such a logical line of questioning.
I am sure I got it from an actual credit card.
We're getting somewhere here.
Why don't you ask me how many credit cards I have and the fact that some of my credit cards have two different numbers.
Jonna. Now, first of all, Carol and I, truthfully, I can probably say this for Carol as well. We don't want to know how many credit cards you have.
I bet it's more than cats.
I do as well. Okay.
And we don't know that number either.
I have four, and I find that to be a little daunting. And I know you're in your head going, four?
Sure. Child play.
Pshaw! That is nothing.
I ate four credit cards for breakfast. Come
exactly.
On.
But the only thing is, Jonna, and I am not going to speak on the side of the folks that are possibly holding your Christmas lights hostage, which just sounds funny. But
they are.
Do you know you actually paid these folks?
He doesn't.
Or the other folks? No. Do you know that they're not wrong?
Well, here's the thing. I don't know whether they gifted me those lights or not. I do not.
I can guarantee you they did not gift you those lights, whichever company it was.
But here's the thing. Right. I want to get a hold of the company that I provided my information to, which is not this company, and say, what is going on here? What is going on? That's what I want. But
so you have not provided your credit card number to the new company?
No, she did. You told us you did. That you gave it to them a second time. Say, this is the info. Yeah. This is the info I gave the other guys.
Yeah. And I've done that two or three times.
Holy cow. You're like,
so you may have paid this two or three times over. They're like, this woman, she doesn't keep track of her expenses. We're just going to keep charging it over and over.
Every 2 months, we're just going to call her back.
I'll tell you what. you are doing them a favor, because that's what they're doing. Their finances are thriving.
You are. You're being very charitable this holiday season. Good for you, girlfriend.
Yeah, I guess I am. But what I want are my lights, because this is like
both of you missed it. Come on now.
You have to remember. Now, don't give me too much of a hard time, because I don't remember right now off the top of my head the guy's name of the book that you just told me that I just learned 20 minutes ago.
The book is A Guide to Thriving, The Science Behind Breaking Old Patterns, Reclaiming Your Agency, and Finding Meaning, coming up after the break. John Rosenberg.
Got
it. Okay. All right. That sounds good. All right. And very nicely done, by the way, Carol. That was a hard cutoff. You are good. You are good, girlfriend. You are good.
That was the radio equivalent of the hook around her neck pulling her off stage.
Exactly. Very Chuck Barris of you. All right. We'll be back. Excellent. John Spilborg, right. Carol Pesci, and this fella. Stick around.
Bye.
Donna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Donna and Carol.
And welcome back again to Happy Hour. Here, Donna Spilborg, Carol Pesci, some other guy, and also guests, because that's kind of what we do. Every week in the second segment, we bring on a brand new illustrious guest. They get a fantastic introduction. Some of them even are breathless at the end of it, saying, wow, I want to learn more about me. And that's what we're going to do right now. And Carol is going to introduce us to John Rosenberg.
Yeah, and gang, don't be jealous, because he's here to talk about his new book, which is just about to drop. But I've had a sneak peek. I've had a chance to read some of it. I am absolutely loving it. I can't wait to finish it. So we have with us today John Rosenberg. He empowers leaders and organizations to break free from survival mode and step boldly into thriving. He's going to explain to us what the difference is there, and how we know if we're stuck in survival mode. With over two decades coaching Fortune 500 executives and global teams, John draws on his belief that positive change begins by reclaiming our agency. Born in Venezuela and now based in Toronto, he holds advanced degrees from Cornell and the University of Pennsylvania. John is currently CEO of StrongPoint Group and founding partner of Anther, a firm dedicated to helping people thrive. He is here today to talk about his brand spanking new book called A Guide to Thriving, The Science Behind Breaking Old Patterns, Reclaiming Your Agency, and Finding Meaning. John, welcome to the show.
Oh, please go on, Carol. That was beautiful. Don't stop. Don't stop on my account. Thank you. Thank you for having me here. It's such a pleasure.
Oh, well, we appreciate it. And honestly, I'm very much loving your book. And Jonna is secretly gritting her teeth because she only reads through audiobooks and she can't get a peek yet, but I have. Anyway, where I would love to begin with you, John, is to tell us your story. Your family story is actually quite fascinating, but the backstory of what brought you to this field and what made you want to write this book, why it's important to you.
Yeah. So I was in the corporate world for 2.5 decades, trying to climb the corporate ladder, as you do, you know, chasing the next big title and the next big promotion. Eventually, that landed me at a startup, at a really fast growing startup, a tech startup. I'm based out of Toronto, and the startup is here. And I was brought in to raise capital. So we raised a Series B round of $150 million. We were growing, we were firing on all cylinders and growing at double digits every week every month. Sorry. Yes. So it was ridiculous growth. I ended up flying to Los Angeles because we were looking for new facilities to expand. It was logistics was the business that we were in. And when I flew back to Toronto, I came down with COVID and I was on a technical call with the team. And for those of us who've been on technical calls, you know how those can go. And it got heated really, really quickly. So at one point I just ended up saying, I can't do this anymore. And I just shut off my laptop and turned off my phone.
Wow.
Walked out of my home office and I heard my two kids playing in the basement. So I walked downstairs and I saw them sitting on the floor playing with Legos. And I just sat with them for about an hour. Oh. And in that moment, as I was sitting with them, you know, I started asking myself some very deep questions. What am I doing with my lives? You know, I've been kind of missing a lot of my experience with his kids. Like I'm physically present, but I'm not actually here. Like I'm not actually connecting with them.
Yep.
So I spent the day kind of meditating on it. And that evening I was sitting in my favorite chair and my wife Adriana walks into the room and she looks at me and she says, "Are you okay?" And I said, "I think I'm done." So over the next 2 weeks, I untangled myself from the company. And then I started a consulting firm, ended up going back to school and getting my master's in applied positive psychology, and then ended up writing a book. And that's how I'm here.
Wow. I am always so blown away when people have the courage to make intentional positive change like that. It just, I admire that so much.
Yeah. And I love the use of the word intentional there, Carol, because part of the thesis of the book is that many of us spend a lot of time in survival mode, but we can choose to go into thriving. We can do so intentionally using our agency.
And I know it's a fairly common word, but explain for those who might not be familiar, what is agency?
So the way I define it in the book, and you'll find many definitions out there, is the capacity to make intentional choices. There's that word intentional. Mm-hmm. But it's supported by the belief that those choices matter and actually have an impact on the world.
Wow.
So the belief part is really important here because beliefs are like this lenses with which we look at the world. So if we're actually able to change our beliefs and understand that everything we do, if we change our beliefs, we can change our lives. And if we change our lives, we can change the world. That's a really powerful unlock. And a lot of us sometimes forget that because we get so overwhelmed and we end up going into this state of survival mode.
Let's talk about, because just the phrase survival mode, and I want you to define it. But when I look at that, I'm on your website. When I look at that, I'm like, yeah, I'm positive I'm in it. But maybe I'm not positive I'm in it. So can we talk about what is survival mode? How do you know when you're in it?
Mm-hmm. So, Jonah, would it be okay with you if I asked you a couple of questions?
No.
Okay. No,
of course.
Okay, then Carol Frankenberry. No, all right. So have you ever felt like you're in survival mode?
Have I ever felt, I feel like I never get out of survival mode. So that's
okay. Yes. So what does that feel like?
Okay. That feels like you're constantly spinning with no opportunity to get off the wheel without feeling guilt or like you should be doing something else or that you have to do something so that to make yourself and other people happy. Like you just never get a moment to relax.
Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful definition, Jonah. And I've asked this question of thousands of people, literally. And the answer is often similar to what you just shared. It's this state, you know, our focus is very narrow. We don't actually get to tap as much as we would like to into our creativity. We feel like we're putting out fires all the time and just going from one moment to the next without actually being able to take a breath, right? Yeah. So, Jonah, let me ask you now, have you ever felt like you're thriving?
Yes.
And what does that feel like?
That feels a little less frenetic. That feels, you know what it feels? The word that comes to mind, it feels much more intentional than the way I describe survival. It feels very intentional and rewarding, intentional and rewarding.
I love that. So here's the interesting thing. Survival mode is actually really helpful and really useful in our lives. We need it. We need it to survive. Mm-hmm. So as Carol mentioned, when she was introducing me, I was born and raised in Caracas, Venezuela. And it's a place that unfortunately fell into anarchy and there was a lot of violence. You know, the year I left the country, by some estimates, there were 52,000 violent murders. So for me to be in survival mode while navigating that experience was actually helpful. It kept me alive. So in those cases, survival mode can be really helpful. However, most of the threats we face today, for most of us in the Western world, not all of us, but for most of us, the threats are psychological, not physical. And yet we react as if our life was at risk. We go into the state of survival mode. Now, the interesting thing about thriving, and Jonah, your experience with it is also fantastic, or your description of it is fantastic, is that often we confuse thriving with success. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to argue that they're not the same thing. Oh. So success is money, and reputation or status and power. And success is great. We all want success. Listen, you know, we navigate in this world and we all want to be more successful. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. Thriving is a little bit different. Thriving is really about having a lot of agency in our lives. It's about finding meaning in the work that we do and in the way we engage with the people around us. And it's about that social connection, that human connection that we have. So one of the arguments that I'm trying to make with this book is saying there's a way in which we can have success and we can have thriving. Yes, at some point, there may be some trade-offs for the two. But how about if we make those trade-offs intentional as opposed to just by default? And it's a hard thing to do because the system we live in is built for success. So that's the argument behind the book.
John, and your life is a perfect example of that. The experience that you shared about you were, quote unquote, successful, double digit growth every week in a company where you were a key player. But so on the outside, people look at you and say, man, he's got it. He's successful. Great. You were not thriving.
Exactly. I wasn't. I was in a constant state of survival mode. I would say for the time that I was at that startup, and I had it before in my life, but this was so clear to me. It was so intense and it was having such a deep impact on my physical and mental health and on my relationships that I felt like, you know, it's interesting because let's go back to the definition of agency. I believe agency sits on a spectrum, right? So you have very low agency, which is something we sometimes say. We say, I don't really have a choice here. That would be really, really low agency. And that's how I felt for a lot of my career. I said, I don't have a choice here. Because if I leave this job, I'm going to be living under a bridge within 2 weeks. And that's what I told myself. And I actually believed it. I really believed it. That wasn't the case. And if you start trying to find the evidence, you figure out that for most of us, that's probably not the case either. So what agency does is it gives us a different choice. So if we're looking at the world as I don't have a choice, agency can tell us, well, maybe there is a choice here. I can actually stay in my job or I can leave. So that would be kind of like a black and white version of agency, right? Which is a little bit higher agency, but it's still kind of low. Really high agency is when we stop seeing our choices as black and white and we start seeing them as a rainbow, as lots of opportunities. So maybe I stay in the job, but I redesign my job, or I only work some days a week, or I hire a bigger team, or, you know, whatever that looks like, or I leave my job and I start a new business, or maybe I just rest for a few months. And once we start seeing those as actual options, as actually something that we would be willing, a path that we would be willing to walk, that's a really big shift in terms of how we navigate life. And we stop going, doing it on autopilot, and we start actually being the drivers. You know, we start actually sitting behind the driver's seat.
John, something you talk about in your book, which is key, is the science. And that's actually part of your subhead. And you talk about the different parts of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, and that when we are in survival mode, we don't have as much access to the creativity and that portion of the brain that might let us even see those options. And what you've done with this book, and again, I haven't finished it yet, but it's brilliant, is you've taken something overwhelming and complex, something that applies to almost every person alive, and you've distilled it down to something, a very simple way to understand it. And you talk about coming up for air. So so the AIR stands for something. So someone might be in survival mode right now and not even, I hear you, I understand you, I wish I had a choice, I don't, because their brain's not even able to function on a level that will show them choices. So can you talk about the AIR?
Yes, absolutely, about this idea of coming up for air. So the first thing, Carol, is that, you know, it's a book, but it's not really a book, it's a guide. And what I mean by that is that I wrote it in a way that you can have your own agency as you read it. What do I mean by that? You don't have to actually read it from cover to cover, although I hope you do. But if you choose that there's only one part that actually seems to resonate with you, that's fine too. If there's one chapter or two chapters that there's a map with 9 elements, and we can get into that a little bit more, but it's a way for you to choose how you want to navigate that process. Now, a big part of the thesis is that to go from survival mode to thriving, we have to come up for AIR, this acronym that you're mentioning, Carol. And AIR stands for awareness, inquiry, and reframing. So what I found as I started going deep into the research rabbit hole and learning what a lot of really smart scientists have been working on for the past 25 years is that those three things kept coming up: awareness, inquiry, and reframing. So let's talk a little bit about what those are. So when we're very close to it, actually, let me use an example to illustrate. My youngest son, his name is Jack, he's 9. And 3 days before going to summer camp, he fell and broke his arm. So, yeah, it was not fun. And he had this big cast all the way from his wrist to his shoulder. So while all his friends were jumping in the lake, I gave him a Rubik's Cube. So he was playing with a Rubik's Cube all summer. That doesn't sound like a lot of fun. So when we're in a difficult situation, when we're in this state of survival mode, it feels like that Rubik's Cube is right next to our eye. Like it feels like, you know, like we can only see one little square in the cube, right? It may be a red square. For a lot of us, we see red when we're in this state of survival mode, but we can't actually see what the object is. We're kind of subject to the Rubik's Cube. Awareness, what it does is it allows us to gently move the Rubik's Cube a little bit further away from our face and create some distance, say 10 to 12 inches from it. And what that allows us to do is to actually look at the object for what it is. We can start looking at the situation from different angles. So we say, okay, this is a cube and it has 6 sides and it has 9 stickers on each side with different colors. So that in itself, it's already a huge deal to create that awareness. And by the way, the research that backed this up is research on mindfulness and on presence. And it's that non-judgmental observance of a situation, you know, becoming the observer, right?
Yep.
So then once we've done that, we move into inquiry. What's inquiry? Asking lots of open-ended questions, not with an intention to get to a specific answer, but with real genuine curiosity. I want to know, okay, so how does this Rubik's Cube move? What are the different, you know, movements that I can make with it? What happens if I throw it in the air? What happens if I put it on the table? And we just start trying to figure out what we can do with this object. So that would be the inquiry phase of AIR. And then the third step, which is reframing, is figuring out what is the combination on the Rubik's Cube that actually works for us. And that may be solving the Rubik's Cube, or it may be something completely different. So a real life example, when I started doing this tour for the book and started getting interviews, I was really bad. Like I'm slowly, gently getting a little bit better, but I was really bad at it. And after my first like 2 or 3 podcasts, I was like, I'm not doing this. I'll just, you know, forget it. I don't want to talk anymore about this. So I went through the AIR process and I said, awareness, well, this is something that I chose to do to publish this book and to talk about it and to share the messages and the ideas out into the world. So that was my awareness moment. Inquiry was like, well, how can I make this more fun for me? How can I make this more meaningful for me? How can I add, you know, how can I look at this in a different way? And eventually the reframing was, listen, I'm just going to go and talk human to human. Here's John talking to 3 people who are kind and gracious enough to open up the space and that they have to allow me to share my ideas. And I'm going to look at all of these interviews as practice. I don't know what they're a practice for, but it kind of helped me be a bit more compassionate with myself. And that was a big gift for me.
And P.S., you are fantastic. You're doing an amazing job. We're loving having you with us. And, you know, just a little bit of a sidebar here. I think in life, it's so questions are so powerful. The right questions are so powerful. We'll never get certain answers if we don't know what to ask. And that's part of what your guide does, is help us ask some really powerful questions.
Yeah. And I think if we can ask those questions, you know, I really love what and how questions, because I think they have this non-judgmental kind of rhythm to them. So there's a lot of those in the book or in the guide. my hope is that it inspires some sort of reflection. You know, it was hard for me to find a publisher. I'm very lucky that Wiley decided to pick up the book and run with it. And I'm grateful to them, because one of the comments that I kept getting is, well, this is not prescriptive enough. you're not actually telling people exactly what to do. And I'm like, I'm writing a book about agency. If I'm telling you what to do,
I'm taking that away.
Isn't that a little ironic? So I think the idea for this book is that if you pick it up, if you engage with it, that you figure out what works for you, because what works for each of us is different.
I was just going to say, John, you could probably rename the book to Figure It Out. And then, you know, with the subtitle in there, right? Because that's kind of what you're guiding people to do. Like, figure it out. You don't have to stay stuck, right? When you shut your laptop in that Zoom meeting, you're like, nope, right? And then you figured it out.
Yeah. I like that title, Jonah.
Oh, you're funny. You're welcome. John,
I really like it.
John, just loving talking with you so much. We would love to have you back on again. I know you're busy right now with the launch of your book, but maybe sometime next year we can have you back and talk to you again. We are wrapping up here with John Rosenberg. He is the author of the brand new book, A Guide to Thriving, The Science Behind Breaking Old Patterns, Reclaiming Your Agency, and Finding Meaning. If you feel stuck or trapped in your life, unhappy, unfulfilled, this is the book you want to look into. It's absolutely brilliant, easy to understand, and really makes your question. John, if people want to hire you, companies want to hire you, they want to learn more about you, buy your book, how do they do that?
Yeah, so the book is available in all the major platforms, and it will be available on audiobook, I think, on January 6th. That's my best guess. But
it said November 25th. It says right here, available upon release, and your release date is November 25th.
That's I hope so. It's been a journey, that's for sure.
John, look. The way, just look at it this way. Mm-hmm. After Christmas, when you start returning so much crap, you will be able to at least have a couple of dollars to go get the audiobook. It'll be your after Christmas present.
Oh, thank you for that. It's also going to be my before Christmas present. But carry on, John. You were saying.
Yeah. And if you want to reach me, you can go on my website, John Rosenberg with an M, Rosemberg, .com. Or you can find me on LinkedIn or Instagram. I'm fairly active there. I'm looking forward to those of you who get a chance to engage with a book and maybe learn something from it or not. I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts and your opinions, ideas, questions, or anything else that's on your mind.
Remarkable. That's great.
All right. Well, listen, John, thank you so very much for joining us today. Much appreciate your time. And we're not done yet. Speaking of time, yes, you've got more with us. I know you're all shaking your heads going, oh, damn, we thought we were done. Anyway, segment number three is still to come. John Spillboard, Carol Pesci, and this fella. And we'll be right back. So please stick around.
Donna and Carol on K104. It's happy hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's happy hour with Donna and Carol.
And welcome back one more time here. Yes, just it's a third time, okay? I told you it was coming. With John Spillboard and Carol Pesci and this fella. And hello, ladies.
Hello.
Frankenberry.
What a John Rosenberg, and that's Rosenberg with an M. He was pretty impressive. That was a nice conversation y'all had.
He was excellent.
He seems so genuine. Oh, my God. I love it.
Yeah. He was excellent and funny. Like, I started laughing when he was like, I was terrible at giving interviews. And I mean, he's just starting the process. He was perfect delivering. He was present. He was listening to what we were asking. He was giving good information and making it simple. Really, really good. I think there's a fair amount of people who are going through life in survival mode and don't need to be in survival mode. And again, I got to say, we had someone on a few weeks ago that I brought this up, that I think COVID affected us long term. I really do. I think what we all went through exacerbated that state of being in survival mode. And maybe there's a lot of us that aren't aware that that's where we are and that there's something we can do about it.
Yeah, that's just it. And I think one of the biggest things for people is, and he probably talks about this in his book, which I will get the audio version, is you kind of don't even realize you're in it sometimes.
Right.
Like, so used to spinning on the wheel and doing the same thing over and over again, and even feeling that misery. Like, I know we have friends who will post things on Facebook. Like, a lot of people like to post how wonderful their life is. And I know people post on Facebook how terrible everything is all the time. And they're definitely stuck, and you get kind of comfortable and complacent, and you really gotta, that's when you gotta pull yourself up, put your nose out of the water and be like, oh, there's air up here. Oh, I get it. Let me have more of this.
I can stop breathing through a straw.
right. That's the kick in the butt that a lot of people.
I love it. And hey, look, we're getting in that time of year that we're looking for a gift to give somebody. A book like this might be the perfect stocking stuffer.
Yeah, exactly. Or you can get Jonna a gift card for when the audiobook comes out.
Or you know what? You can buy Jonna a whole set of Christmas lights that she can put on her office, because the company that is holding them hostage probably isn't going to do it before Christmas. So there you go. If you're looking for gift ideas, Christmas lights.
That's right. Or another gift idea is you could possibly offer to help Jonna out by actually looking through her credit card accounts for her, so she doesn't waste 10 minutes of her life that she'll never get back, and check and see if she actually did pay anybody.
I think I'd have a panic attack if I looked through.
I was just going to say.
I know, seriously.
Dreaming? You'd have to hire somebody to pack a lunch, sleeping bag. God.
Can you see if, you know, Craig comes home and Carol's like in a chair, wide-eyed?
Sweating.
Yeah, exactly. She's not blinking. She's not speaking. Even the dog is growling at her.
It's bad. It's bad. It's worse than we thought.
That is too funny.
Oh, yes. My God. She's laughing because it's true, Frankenberry.
I know it is. I know. I'm sure it is. But listen, John Rosenberg, thank you very much for joining us today. And this is Happy Hour. Now, listen, Thanksgiving week will be a repeat of a show, probably something recent. So you will enjoy whatever it happens to be. But this coming week, we are going to enjoy the Thanksgiving holiday. Take the week off. Give yourselves a little bit of a break. And you all do the same. Please have a good and a safe Thanksgiving when it gets to you next week.
Well, wait, we can't just go yet, because two things. One, yep. I want to wish everybody within the sound of our voice.
Our voice says, I was just looking through my credit card information.
Oh, you're such a jerk. That is hilarious. But yes, that's what was going on. I do want to wish everyone within the sound of our voice a very happy Thanksgiving. And I'm going to tease a topic that we're going to talk about when we come back the week after Thanksgiving. And here's how I can tease that. So I think I mentioned to you guys probably off air. I decided to go on peptides to lose a couple of pounds.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yes. A couple of pounds that you don't need to lose. Yes. Please tell more. Tell us more.
So I started the peptides this week at the starting weight. I'm going to say this for the record, and most women should not do this, but I'm going to do it. My starting weight is 122.8, but I was wearing sweatpants and a t-shirt. So let's say that's an even 122.5. Goal weight is 115, so that's 7.5 pounds. So when we come back week after Thanksgiving, I'm going to do another weigh-in.
Okay,
you're creating enemies right now. That's all. I'm just
right, thinking. Right. And now, you know, and if you do get down to this fabled 115, aren't you still though going to need to put weights in your pocket to keep you from blowing away at a very light breeze when you step out of the house?
Very funny. 115, I think, would be a very good goal weight. And here's the challenge. We have a major food holiday in between now and the time that I do another weigh-in. A major food holiday.
Good. So blow this weigh-in out of the water and have some fun for the holiday and stop thinking about the dumb stuff that you don't need to do.
Well, if we come back and I weigh more than 122.5, you're going to eat them words.
No, I'm not. I'm going to say I'm glad you enjoyed your holiday, for Christ's sake.
Right, exactly.
Holy cow. All right, listen here. Before she makes all the rest of us crazy even more, for Jonna Spillmore, for Carol Pesci, I am this fella. And, I've got a name, but I ain't going to tell you. I'll tell you after Christmas. Or after Thanksgiving, actually, as a matter of fact. I'm going to hold on to it till then. Take care.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spillmore and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104online.com.